Welcome back. This is Public Address Radio on Radio Live. If you weren't on Mars in the last week, you will have noticed that the iPhone caused a bit of a stir in the last week. And one of the more interesting aspects of the stir were the two people who got themselves one and within 15 minutes broken it apart to see what was inside it. They filmed the whole thing, put it on YouTube, and of course the whole world of YouTube jumped all over them. They then did a response explaining why they did this, and here it is.
Once and for all, we bought it. It was an hour and a half after the phone went on sale. No one else had opened it up yet. We just wanted to be the first ones to open it up to see what we could find, see if we could make any kind of deal based on that, I guess. I don't know. I gotta go, because I got better things to do than sit here and yap to you guys on YouTube about, like, why did you make my iPhone? Dude, we did it. It's done. Get over it. Go buy one. You now know that it takes four hits with a hammer in the side before one will break. I'd say it's a pretty good feature.
Right answer, if you ask me.
Have fun.
Yeah, wasn't the outrage in the comments on those YouTube posts quite remarkable? It was.
People were just so upset that somebody had done this to the Jesus phone. You know, you can't do that to the spiritual icon. And really, it had been, you know, 6 months of it was called the Jesus phone because everybody was talking about it, but nobody had seen it. And the notion that you would take this thing and tear it apart really did offend everybody's consumer ethos, I think. You know,
Of course, there was a serious purpose in cracking open these phones, which was to try and discover what Apple hadn't told people what was inside it.
As it happens, we've actually got one in the house. We have been presented with an example to describe to you by none other than Steve Sims. I can tell you, is the only person I think I will ever interview who has played Segway polo with Steve Wozniak. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. The co-founder of Apple. He's a crazy guy on the field, that's for sure. Yeah, a lot of fun.
I should explain that Steve Sims has a long history of entrepreneurial spirit in the telco and IT world, and that is how you met these guys in the first place, isn't it?
Well, I mean, certainly as far as the Apple boys and well, as we call them, the aftershocks from California. Yeah, I mean, the IT game is a very small place, as you know, and when you start talking among a few mates and a mate of a mate and a mate, and you've all got a similar interest, you just suddenly go and bash around balls on the field with a Segway, or
and anyway, he gave you this iPhone. Let's
so you
have
didn't
a look
have
at
to
it.
Queue.
No, I didn't have to queue. Here it is. It's the real live iPhone. In fact, if you check out Rod Drury's blog on drury.net.nz, you'll see a photo on Flickr there of him virtually handing it to me. Yeah, it didn't have to queue. Steve did queue. He was in there with Robert Scoble waiting for his purchase. Even though Jobs, he wanted to go and give him a phone, he said, no, I'm going to be a customer. And true to his word, he was. So, yeah, he bought one for me as well. A fantastic gesture.
It's very elegant, isn't it? It's a very slim line. It's a beautiful. The screen is a very glossy color. It really. Have a look at it, Russell.
Hmm. And that let's talk about the screen, because the big doubt that everyone had was, you know, it's got this multi-touch screen interface, and before it came out, everyone was saying, "Oh, it'll just get scratched. It'll get smeared. It's not going to work."
Yeah. I mean, that screen, if you've seen the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise in it, man, for me, that is a Minority Report moment where you can squeeze pictures, you can move them around. The smearing, yeah, you get used to it after a couple of seconds. But the other thing is that the scratches won't really happen with that device because, I mean, some dude went and threw one in a bag full of keys and bundled it around for about 15 minutes and not one scratch was on the screen. So it's pretty durable. I think they've got some quartz laminate on top of it or whatever, but she's a pretty durable piece of machinery.
That's actually been a characteristic of Apple products, is that they'll actually develop new materials, which is what gives them their head start. And you can see it's going to maybe take a little while for the competition to catch up on this part of it.
Yeah, depending on how much the competition wants to pay the manufacturer. I mean, someone's already gone and disassembled the bill of materials for that thing, and they reckon there's a 50% profit margin in it. Well, I mean, I'm sure that people will be beating down the doors of some of the manufacturers of the components of those things to stick them in their devices like Nokia, etc. Yeah,
I'm intrigued by the camera aspect though. Have you taken many shots yet? What do you think?
I've only taken a couple of shots on it, and it's a 2 megapixel camera. It's great for happy snaps, but don't expect it to kind of take great landscapes for you. No.
And the using the on-screen typepad, how do you find that?
Really easy, yeah.
So what was the purpose of your visit to the US?
Well, I mean, we do a lot of business up there with my business, Tomy Zone. And being a Wi-Fi hotspot provider, we've got a manufacturing partner up there called D-Link. Now, everyone knows D-Link. You've probably got one of their routers at home or things like that. So our software's on their router. So we go up there quite a lot, see the folks up there. We just attended another show, Interop, recently in Vegas. So, yeah, we're back and forth up there a fair bit. There in Asia, pretty much, yeah.
It's probably worth explaining that Tomy Zone is quite a nice idea that takes the abundant Wi-Fi that people have and making it available to a wider market, isn't it?
Well, what a wonderful segue, excuse the pun.
you're probably used to explaining it, so why don't you explain it to us from the ground up? Just what does Tomy Zone do?
Tomy Zone basically enables any broadband connection anywhere on the planet to be shared to be a revenue-earning Wi-Fi hotspot. That's as simple as it goes. The bottom line with it is really people have a lot of broadband connections. Right now, there's 400 million broadband connections. This internet resource, which is now a commodity, needs to be shared because there's a lot of Wi-Fi gadgets out there in the market. You know, look at the iPhone as a classic example. Even my Nokia E61, you know, that's got Wi-Fi inbuilt. It's useless when I'm outside the office or outside the home unless I want to go and pay a lot of money to go and use a Wi-Fi hotspot. So with the Tomy Zone concept, we don't have to run a network because it's already there. We don't have to buy the boxes because the customers are already buying the boxes. So that means, in turn, that we can offer a very cheap way to access the internet using Wi-Fi. Like, for instance, we charge $3 a day in America, $4.50 a day in New Zealand. But the person that owns the broadband connection and owns the box gets half of that money put into their Tomy Zone account, which they can go and spend on whatever they like. So we also run a bit of a friends concept as well, and we like to call ourselves the Skype for Wi-Fi. So, for instance, we know each other. You come to my place, use my Tomy Zone for free because you're on my friends list. However, if that person just outside your doorway wants to go and use the Tomy Zone, they have to pay.
So, in other words, if I take my cell phone out and I go into the city, instead of having to pay exorbitant rates to use the internet on my cell phone, I can hook into this network and pay just a few dollars and get the same thing.
You got it. Well, it's actually faster than a 3G network in general terms. I mean, certainly much cheaper. I got the shock of my life. One of the moments of truth was where you jump off a plane in Asia, for instance, and you get this wonderful text message from your provider saying, you can use your 3G over here, but it's going to cost you $30 a meg. What?
Yeah. And you do get these horror stories routinely, don't you? People have gone roaming to Australia and found that their digital bill was $2,500, I recall a story about a couple of months ago.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Those guys have to kind of recover a lot of money from the 3G licenses they paid up for and stumped up for gigantic cell sites that cost them millions of dollars. So, yeah, fair enough, they've got to charge a lot. But, you know, you look at our business model, hey, those D-Link access points are only $100 about.
But what matters, of course, it's a real chicken and egg issue, isn't it? That you need to get the people using it, and you need to get people aware of it. And until you build up the momentum, there aren't going to be those spots where you can take your phone, are there?
Ubiquity of Wi-Fi hotspots is the problem on the planet, and one that we're trying to solve. So, our competitor's doing it really well, of which there's only one. It's a company called Fon. And so between us both, if we can, if you like, litter the planet with Wi-Fi hotspots, it makes it more useful.
So if our listeners like the sound of that, where do they go? How do they find out more?
Tomyzone.com, TomiZone.com.
A very straightforward site, I can testify. It's a 1-2-3 and tells you precisely what happens. I recommend it.
Well, we've certainly got a one-line strategy, easier than an iPod to use and better than Skype for billing, and that's why we're calling ourselves the Skype of Wi-Fi.
Excellent. Thanks, Steve. Steve Sims there from Tomyzone.com.
And coming up after the break, we've got the post-mortem on this year's 48 Hours Film Competition, and after that, a really remarkable story of wartime and brotherly love.